complicated simple love. When did this become a game? I don't want to play. I don't want to play. I don't want to play.
It's just a hair after 9 o'clock at 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine, where in this next hour of programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. It's time now for Talking Animals, KUCI. That's brand new music from a band called The Bad Plus. Very, very cool jazz trio with their first record out called Give. And that was a piece called Frog and Toad. So, of course, that's how we're easing into today's edition, Talking Animals on 88.9 FM. KUCI in Irvine, and streaming live on the internet, of course, at KUCI.org. And the whole enterprise is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number. Call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love to get calls. Otherwise, we get a bit lonely here at the KUCI studios. And we're pretty darn friendly, if we don't mind saying so ourselves, here at Talking Animals, especially with callers. So, you know, there's no confrontation, no provocative, getting in a tussle with the callers thing here on Talking Animals. So please phone us. And actually, our guest today is going to be on live with us, so you might want to call in while we're chatting with him. But we'll get to that in a moment. Meanwhile, other ways to be in touch with us include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com and checking out our wonderful website at talkinganimals.net. That's right. Again, that's .net, folks. Also, before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another rip-snorting rendition of the Serena Sharp Show. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. We're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. It's been the better part of 9 months since we launched Talking Animals, and we've been enormously fortunate during that time to have a long string of terrific guests, ranging in recent weeks from comedian, actress, activist Janine Garofalo to Dr. Dee Boersma, one of the world's most renowned experts on penguins, to Alan Young, who played Wilbur Post and Mr. Ed. Not only are all those shows featuring those interviews archived on our nifty website at www.talkinganimals.net. But our string of exceptional guests continues today when we speak with Francis Batista, the director of animal care and Los Angeles outreach, as well as one of the founders of Best Friends Animal Society, which operates in Utah, southern Utah, the nation's largest sanctuary for abused and abandoned cats, dogs, and other animals. And while the sanctuary is based in Utah, they do considerable outreach in Southern California, including some major events coming up this weekend and next month. So we'll hear all about that and more when Francis joins us in just a few minutes. Meanwhile, on Talking Animals, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. And I want to remind you of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals, not only this week's animal news items, but also any other animal topic you'd care to discuss, announcements, if you have an event coming up that we should know about. Other observations, of course, any news stories you might have spotted, they'd all be most welcome. The number here is 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So turning now to interesting or important developments recently in animal news, typically these are local, regional, national, sometimes international news stories, animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight, and with any luck to get your comments on and discuss. We also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities that you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So, having said that, let's talk turkey, as it were. Starting now, as we often do, but with a slightly different approach, we're going to talk about tiger rescue. And but I'm actually going to read a release I just got, cool new information, as well as just sort of a different way to present the information that I've largely presented here every Monday for months on end. So it starts off, one of the most tragic stories of wild animal abuse in history will have a happy ending, reports the Fund for Animals, which has been responsible for the rescue, rehabilitation, and daily care of 75 big cats over the past year. In November 2002, the California Department of Fish and Game seized 10 tigers from a, quote, pseudo-sanctuary, unquote, in Colton, California, called Tiger Rescue, after finding them in filthy cages without water and suspecting the owner of illegal breeding. The fund assisted the state by caring for the tigers and placing them in accredited facilities. In April 2003, officials executed a search warrant on the Tiger Rescue owner's residence and discovered 90 dead tiger carcasses, including 58 baby tigers dead in a freezer. 13 other cats were found barely alive. Then the seat seized control of Tiger Rescue, where 54 big cats remained. The Fund for Animals took over care at a cost of more than $500 per day for the cats who survived one of the worst incidents on record. Once rehabilitated, all but 39 tigers were placed in accredited sanctuaries. The remaining cats have since lived at the now-defunct Tiger Rescue property under round-the-clock care by the Fund's Chuck Tracy, an amazing, amazing man, by the way, and over 400 volunteers. Michael Markarian, president of the Fund for Animals, explains the Tiger Rescue property was deplorable. Our staff and volunteers set up a triage, building shaded areas, safeguarding the pens that were dangerous to the cats, and most importantly, providing medical treatment, food, water, and professional 24-hour attention to rehabilitate them. The fund raised $250,000 last fall to have a sanctuary built for the remaining 39 tigers who had not been placed. PAWS, which is the Performing Animal Welfare Society, came on board and committed to create a new 10-acre tiger habitat with dens, trees, and swimming pools on their San Andreas, California property with the money raised by the fund. This week, construction begins at PAWS. Later this spring, the tigers will be transported by the fund and PAWS to their permanent home, where they will live the rest of their lives under proper care. According to Pat Derby, director of PAWS, we are committed to providing the best quality of care to these animals for the rest of their lives. It's frightening to think that there are many stories similar to theirs all over the country because of the lack of enforcement of existing laws. Sadly, the Tiger Rescue Facility had been inspected by regulatory agencies and seems to have fallen through the cracks. While these big cats were fortunate that the fund and PAWS came to the rescue, unfortunately, there are over 10,000 tigers privately owned in this country, double the number of those in the wild in Asia. Most are bred and abused in order for their owners, quote-unquote, to try to domesticate, quote-unquote, them. 90% die within their first 2 years of captivity. It goes on from there, but the main point is, you know, it's obviously a bright ending to really a crummy, crummy story. But still, and this is where I'll pick up with my normal spiel, in the meantime, every day, those tigers and other big cats that are there need to be cared for. And it's again done, it's overseen by this amazing man, Chuck Tracy, who's left his own facility down in Ramona, California, by San Diego, called the Wildlife Rehabilitation Center. Left those animals, left his wife, left everything for months on end, really, to oversee the day-to-day operation of Tiger Rescue, along with, you know, 300-400 at least probably now volunteers who come in from all parts of Southern California, Northern California, and I think even other states. So this is all by way of saying that if you think you could ever carve out a day, part of a day, on a weekend, a weekday, obviously even so much the better, to drive out to Colton. It's, you know, it's sort of in broad strokes by Ontario, broader strokes by San Bernardino, but it's a really, really cool experience. I mean, I can assure you, if you find the time to get out there and help look after these tigers and big cats, clean their enclosures, feed them, water them, you know, fix up any part of their enclosure that may need attending to, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it's a really amazing, cool experience. So if you think you can do that, email us at talkinganimals@AOL.com, and we will hook you up with the folks who coordinate all that. Also, don't want to necessarily read this, but I at least want to call attention to and maybe read a little bit of a pretty interesting editorial that was in the Los Angeles Times op-ed section. I guess they actually call it just the opinion section on Sunday. But the headline is "A Chance for Han to Leave the Doghouse," and I will read a little bit of it and then hope you'll track it down if you haven't already seen it. As chief of Los Angeles Animal Services, Jerry Greenwald may not have been the most important manager in LA city government, but his announced retirement in April provides Mayor James K. Han with at least two opportunities to improve his most cantankerous city agency and to show that he can clean up a point of city bureaucracy he created, not always thoughtfully, after his 2001 election. Apart from police and fire, probably no city agency has a higher human interest profile than animal services. There are tens of thousands of active animal lovers. They call themselves the humane community, and they were, almost without exception, opposed to Greenwald's way of running things at the department. This was partly Greenwald's fault. He was a lifer bureaucrat who his critics contend, dragged his feet when he didn't ignore such long-sought reforms as more neutering, more adoptions, and deep reductions in euthanizing stray and unwanted animals. Greenwald's apparent delay in implementing the mayor's no-kill animal policy may have been a factor in his retirement decision. And it goes on from there. But very interesting reading. Again, that's in yesterday's Los Angeles Times opinion section. So, check that out. More locally, coming up, there's a thing called the Concert for Compassion. It's a benefit for the Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty, and that's an organization dedicated to ending the suffering of animals inside product testing laboratories. And that concert is coming to Irvine's Oak Canyon Ranch on March 28th. The lineup includes The Used, Goldfinger, Sugar Cult, Story of the Year, Ecstatic Lullaby, STUN, Kinnison, Wagner, Mosley's, Anatomy of a Ghost, and members of Good Charlotte. Tickets are $20, and you can find out more at their website, www.concertforcompassion.com. Sounds like a really cool concert for a really cool cause. I actually tried to get a hold of the folks at Goldfinger, hoping that John there might want to come on, who talks a lot about animal issues and whatever, and talk about the concert stuff. Haven't heard back, so don't know if we'll get that happening. But either way, I want you guys to know about the concert, and we'll keep mentioning that up through the concert date itself. Also kind of locally, but notably in terms of the precedence, really. In fact, it starts off this little item. In a precedent-setting verdict, an Orange County jury found veterinarian Craig Bergstrom of All Care Animal Referral Center guilty of veterinarian malpractice. For the first time, a court of law has awarded a guardian more than the quote-unquote market value of a companion animal. The plaintiff, Mark Bluestone, was awarded $9,000 to reimburse the overpayment of vet bills and $30,000 for the unique value to him of his dog, Shane, who was misdiagnosed and over-medicated to the point of death. Yikes. So, certainly an interesting development by any assessment in the world of both legal and animal movements. It's time now for our sort of mid-news quick instant animal quiz. Simply a true-false question, but if you are the first person to call in with the correct answer, you get a prize. Yep, and again, we have cool prizes here at Talking Animals. It's not just crummy little trinket. We've got CDs, we've got books, most of which are by previous guests on the show, but one book we have is by Shirley MacLaine, who has not yet been a guest on the show, but I'm never giving up. But anyways, her latest book, of course, was co-written by her dog. So that's worthy alone of being a prize here at Talking Animals. But we also have cool T-shirts and other merchandise that various animal organizations that we support have provided us. And we've got accessories and collars and all kinds of cool little pieces of jewelry and, you know, some pretty neat stuff. So anyways, the point is, both on this quick true-false quiz and later when we do Name That Animal Tune, there are some nifty little prizes at stake. All right? So, here's the question. True, false? First person to call in at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, we'll get a prize. All right, here we go. Farmers feed newborn calves magnets to keep scraps of metal in the stomach so it doesn't pass through the digestive system, which can cause the death of the animal. True, false? Farmers feed newborn calves magnets to keep scraps of metal in the stomach so it doesn't pass through the digestive system, which can cause the death of the animal. True, false? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And let's see, we're going to continue with one or two maybe more stories, and then we're going to get into the comedy corner, and then we'll be hopefully speaking with Francis. So at least one more item for now, for sure. Today, that's March 15th, caring and concerned citizens around the world will be faxing and emailing Canadian government politicians and officials voicing their strong opposition to the slaughter of 350 baby harp and hood seals. This kill takes place off the east coast of Canada and is heavily subsidized by the Canadian taxpayer, the majority of whom are against the brutal killing of these beautiful marine mammals. The Canadian harp seal hunt is the largest single mass slaughter of a mammalian wildlife species anywhere in the world. Over 1 million harp seals are condemned to be cruelly slaughtered over a 3-year period. The seal hunt methods of kill, you may ask, clubs, hack-a-picks, rifles, and shotguns. It is grossly inhumane kill that goes mostly unregulated, as there are limited fisheries officer to watch and inspect the number of sealers on the ice. Credible witnesses have documented seeing seals skinned alive and tortured. There's also an incredibly wasteful hunt where it is estimated that for every seal landed, another is shot and lost under the ice, not to be included in the quota. The Canadian Department of Fishery and Oceans insists that the seals must die so that cod populations can increase. Their position is that the harp seal is a major predator of the cod, yet there is little scientific justification for this position. When the first European explorers landed on the east coast of Canada, there was no shortage of cod, and there are an estimated 30 million seals. Today, there are under 5 million, and numbers continue to decline. With cod populations at less than 1% of pre-Columbian levels, the seal has become the scapegoat for the excesses of the Canadian and foreign drug trawler fleet that plundered the Great Banks for decades and left very little behind. Now the seals are the target for Canada's continued mismanagement of marine wildlife. So, again, to find out more, see how you can protest, faxes, emails, letters, etc., probably the most direct route would be go to www.seashepherd.org, and they will give you the lowdown. You can download resources, etc. So, anyway, yikes. I guess is the best thing we can say there. So, at least for now, that's today's edition of the Animal News. And, of course, if there are ever any news stories or announcements of events you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@AOL.com. I'd also love to encourage you to email us with comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits, and any other animal topic that's on your mind. That email, again, is talkinganimals@AOL.com. And I'm pleased to remind you, perhaps redundantly so, about the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check out the site at www.talkinganimals.net. That's .net. And join the sign up for the email list so we can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other cool announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of all the shows we've really done over the last 9 months, sorted photographs and articles, all kinds of links, other audio pieces, and more. So please stop by, take a look around the site again. It's talkinganimals.net. It's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which, as always, of course, involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Jeff Wayne with a piece called The Wolf, the Bear, and the Alligator on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
So I get to the condo, I unpack, and I thought, well, I'm going to go out and take a walk and take a look at Alaska. Look outside, there's a wolf out there. I call the condo manager, hey, there's a wolf out there.
Well, that's Ray.
What do I care what his name is? I didn't travel 2,000 miles to be on a first-name basis with a wolf.
Oh, he's a pet. Just call him to you.
This isn't the object of what my desire is. I'm afraid of this thing, so I stayed in the condo all that week because this pet wolf's out running around. I'm not tangling with a wolf. Volcanoes, hurricanes, I'm not Hercules. The next week, I'm in Fairbanks, Alaska. Now, this is incredible. Very small city. I can't wait to get out and look around. And the club manager tells me, now, listen, don't go on the outskirts of town. There's bears. They'll attack you. What's happening here? He says, sometimes they come in this city and attack people. So this is terrible. So if one sees you, act like you're dead. I said, brother, I won't have to act. He'll just come over and sniff you for a little while. He's not going to be smelling me long, I'll tell you that. Said he's going to test to see if you're dead or not. He's going to take his paw and bang you in the chest a couple times, but don't make any noise. Do you know how big a bear's paw is? Cracking my ribs, make no noise? This is like being married. Oh! So he said, well, if you can't act like you're dead, then find a hill to run down. Now imagine this, you're out here, here's a bear. And you're supposed to say, stop, let me find a hill. I don't know the geography of this area, why do I want to run down a hill? Well, the bear's front legs are shorter than his back legs, and he can't run down the hill. That's right, he'll roll and be waiting for me at the bottom. A month later, I'm in Miami, Florida, and I'm playing golf. We're next to a canal, I see this thing that looks like a log move. Uh-oh, watch out. I said, what is that? That looks like an alligator. The guy next to me, that's a gator. Keep your eye on that ball. I'm going to keep my eye on that alligator. Brother, that's a handicap right there. And none of these people seemed that nervous about any of this. So I said to him, I said, well, I guess, you know, you're sort of comfortable because we can outrun that alligator.
Oh, no, no, no. Alligator goes 35 miles an hour, fast as a man, knocks you over with the tail, grabs you with the teeth, drags you under the water, drowns you, and eats you for a couple days.
I don't need this information. I came out a crappy golfer. Now I'm winding up a human snack bar. But if the alligator starts to run after you, zigzag, because he can't zig, that's it, stop. His name is Ray, run down the hill, it's over.
All right, that was Jeff Wayne with a piece called The Wolf, the Bear, and the Alligator, taken from his CD entitled The Jeff Comedy Jam. You can find out more by visiting www.uproarcomedycd.com. And the Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you are indeed listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. And as many of you know, we also stream live on the Internet at www.kuci.org. Some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way, and some of you perhaps got there through our nifty website, talkinganimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Early in the show, I mentioned that this week's guest is Francis Batista, the Director of Animal Care and Los Angeles Outreach, as well as one of the founders of Best Friends Animal Society, which operates the nation's largest sanctuary for abused and abandoned cats, dogs, animals, and other animals. While the sanctuary is based in Utah, they do considerable outreach in Southern California, including some major events coming up both this weekend and next month. So let's get the scoop on these events and much more by welcoming Francis Batista to Talking Animals. Francis, are you there?
I am.
Cool. Is the echo any better?
I've still got it a bit.
Okay, shoot. Well, I'm going to see if I can tinker with that as we go along here,
sounds like I'm on a cell phone from somewhere. But
all right, well, we'll hope you don't drop out at least. So anyway, as many of our listeners know, in mid-December we were fortunate enough to have your colleague Michael Mountain on the show, who filled us in on kind of the history and sort of overall mission of Best Friends. But building on that base, we're eager to hear about your sort of, you know, Best Friends bailiwick, very much including some of the key LA events coming up soon. But first, I'd kind of like to delve into a bit of your history, just because I always think it's interesting to hear the path someone took to becoming an animal person. I mean, sometimes it's direct, sometimes it's circuitous, but to me at least, it's always interesting. So, I mean, when did you mark that? Did you grow up with a lot of animals, and did you kind of start off very early on as an animal person?
Well, I grew up with animals, and it was really not something that was, while I always had a great affection for them, it's not something that struck me as an issue
mm-hmm.
until probably, the late 1960s. I became aware of.
And how old were you then, Francis? If I can ask, just so we can kind of track this a bit.
Well, I'm old, so
okay.
It was probably about. I guess in my early 20s.
Okay.
And I became aware of animal vivisection and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And started doing a lot of work informally and distributing literature and
about vivisection.
Yeah.
Okay.
And vivisection was sort of a primary focus for a number of years until I started doing animal rescue in about 1974, which has started slowly with just, you know, shelter rescue, and then continued to grow, as most people do who are in animal rescue and the humane movement, if they haven't come at it from kind of the corporate charitable world. Most people involved in animal welfare have come at it from some personal experience or from doing a little rescue here and a little rescue there, and suddenly, you know, you see the magnitude of the problem, the scale of it. Once your eyes are open to it, you see it everywhere, mm-hmm. and you're aware that there are animals that are in need just about behind every, you know, grocery store that you want to look at, you know, feral cats or stray dogs running around, or, you know, all of these things. And then you sort of start getting into the numbers, and the more you become involved, the more you become aware of the extent of the problem and the tragedy of it.
And then it almost inevitably, if you care enough to be that far along the path, then you just can't help but sort of be pulled in further and see what you can do.
Well, the only way you could possibly do it, I think, would be to make a conscious decision to say, I don't want to know anymore. Because the...
I mean, the only way to avoid being pulled in.
Yeah, the only way to you'd have to sort of deliberately avoid the issue.
Sure.
Because it is so pronounced and so prominent and so prevalent.
Yeah.
When Best Friends got started, kind of when we actually began the sanctuary in the early 1980s, we did it because we felt we just had to address a very small, what we saw was a local problem. And it was something that we'd always had our hearts set on and something we felt was to be great, but never really thought of it from the point of view of, starting, becoming a big sanctuary. We just wanted to address a problem that we saw.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of led us into taking on animal control in this kind of rural community because we had the opportunity to do it, and we were able to do it, and we thought, well, how big a deal could it be? You know, here we are out in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Anything we did would have to be better than what was happening in the local pound where animals were being put down on a weekly basis, you know, by the vet who would visit. It was very distressing. We went to the local mayor and said, hey, we'd like to do animal control. And he said, okay, sure, go ahead.
Great. All right.
You know, so that was that was sort of how high the level of priority that was given to it.
Sure.
We could have been making sausage for anybody cared. It was not an issue.
Right.
And before you know it, out of nowhere, we had went from zero to 12, not zero, but from a couple of hundred animals that we had amongst a group of us had been rescuing over the years to about 1,200 animals in about 2 years.
Yeah.
And we realized that, we were into this big time. And, you know, like most organizations that get in over their head, and which we advise people not to do, we did everything wrong, you know.
Sure. But that's the beauty of it, because it's too late to go back at that point, right?
Well, it's too late to go back. And also, you lead with your heart.
Sure.
Then you want to sort of lay low. You don't want to, the thing you need to do, and most organizations know this now, but is you need publicity, you need promotion. But
mm-hmm.
all publicity and promotion ever brought was more animals, not money or support.
Sure.
And the people that did respond, you know, we were not, didn't have the infrastructure or the, sort of the organizational awareness and knowledge to develop, supporters and cultivate contributors and all that sort of thing. So,
right.
It was a very steep learning curve. And in about 1990, when the whole thing really became critical, we realized, look, we have to get real here. We have to, make a commitment to creating an organization with an infrastructure. We have to develop a membership and a development program and a mailing list and blah, blah, and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
And because we've got these, we are responsible. We've made this commitment. We have these animals. We have to do this. And by that time, we were already really probably the largest operation in the country.
Wow.
But we were nowhere on the map because we'd spent most of our time, avoiding the kind of publicity that would help to draw attention because we didn't really weren't able to handle it.
Right. It was sort of a mixed bag at that point.
You're sort of you're in a kind of catch-22.
Sure.
Because you really need support.
Yeah.
But you're not able to handle the publicity because it brings both more demands for help, but
right.
it also, and the help that it does bring, you then have to, it's just another job to do of managing the database, of
sure.
doing mailings, of develop. So we see this now with lots and lots of organizations that are just kind of transitioning from, kind of mom and pop or sort of independent rescuer organization type status to trying to actually create an organization that will sustain their efforts.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of what Best Friends has done over the years has been to, pass along our experience. We hold conferences and seminars and classes and all that sort of thing about developing organizations and how to, transition from A to B without sort of putting yourself and the animals at risk. Because everybody who's in rescue knows that the nightmare scenario is the really badly run operation.
Oh yeah,
that's about to go south, and dump hundreds of animals onto an already overburdened infrastructure of the humane community.
Sure, sure, and the problem just escalates. I want to tell our listeners who are listening, we're speaking with Francis Batista from Best Friends Animal Society based in Utah, but we're also going to get into shortly some of their events and activities in the Southern California area. If you want to call in and ask Francis anything about animal rescue, sanctuaries, Best Friends, etc., 949-824-5824, 949-UCI. KUCI. So Francis, one of the hats among, I'm sure, several that you wear is director of animal care. What does that involve? Before we get into some of the outreach stuff in a moment.
Well, the animal care here at the sanctuary is making sure that the standards of care are maintained. That the larger the thing grows, and the more the people who, you know, the founders. Are removed from the day-to-day operations to make sure that there is a level of communication between the people on the ground and the people who have set up the program, and to make sure that anybody has access to, you know, that there is a line of communication up and down so that the animals aren't being, there's no little kind of spots
glitch.
Where the animals are not being appropriately cared for.
Mm-hmm.
And if there are issues that people are concerned about, saying, well, this dog isn't doing well, or this situation needs attention, or this building has really kind of become run down and we need to do something about it, or, you know, we need to kind of change the way we're doing this, that there's kind of feedback from the shop floor, so to speak, so that we can do things and stay current with what's going on in the name of Best Friends and at the sanctuary, and also to make sure that we give the animals the very best possible care that we can.
And again, there's a pretty enormous number. I mean, currently, what would you say is the total number of animals at the sanctuary at this moment?
Well, it fluctuates, but it runs between 1,500 and 1,800, you know, depending.
Yeah. So that must be a lot of coordination and a lot of communication to.
Well, there's a staff of about 250, and
oh
that breaks
goodness.
Down, you know, everything from most of it is animal care of one sort or another, whether
sure.
This, you know, pooper scooping and feeding and grooming and walking and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also a substantial support team, because what most people see in terms of the sanctuary is really the tip of an iceberg. It's a huge operation, and so, you know, you need to have a maintenance crew. You need to have people who are answering the phones. If we realize that we're not able to deal with all of the requests that we get, and that in order for Best Friends to actually fulfill its role and its obligations to the wider world, we need to do more than just, you know, sit here and say, well, yes, we have room for this dog, or we don't have room for that dog, or we can take three cats, or we can help with this or help with that.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be more proactive out in the world at large and both help communities develop their own programs, but also help individuals deal with animal-related problems as they come along. So one of the largest recent developments, or, you know, we have basically a team of 9 people, probably 10, 12 now, that do nothing but handle incoming calls and help people sort out problems in their communities.
Wow.
We also have a network of Best Friends members around the country numbering about 14,000. These are people who have put their hands up to say, yes, I'd like to help out with things that are happening in my area. So, for example, if, you know, somebody calls from Nebraska and saying there's somebody here taking care of a feral cat colony, she's gotten sick and she has to go into hospital and we need somebody to step up, or we need to do something about this group of cats, or we need help with this and that, we can activate the network in that area to bring people out to help address these issues.
Wow.
And it's been very effective and really working very well.
That's really quite a network. That's amazing. That's great. And this also probably brings us fairly smoothly into outreach. And again, one of the many other hats you wear is sort of for Best Friends, you know, L.A. outreach. There's really a fairly concerted effort in the Southern California area for outreach. When did that start and sort of why, although the why's probably fairly self-evident? But
Well, we have a lot of members and supporters in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
We've been working out in Los Angeles since started visiting there in 1991. I mean, originally we started visiting because we were, you know, trying to drum up members and supporters.
Sure.
And as, you know, we became aware of, more aware of the local issues and problems, we started using people who wanted to volunteer for us in Los Angeles to set up programs and various things to help relate to the problems in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've been involved in, you know, things from the back in the fires in 1993 to the earthquake where we had a lost and found hotline where we were, you know, one of the primary kind of resources that used to scroll over the television for linking up, helping people to access the system to find stray pets, but also distributing information about, you know, where to go, what to look for, how, what your, you know, what dogs are inclined to do, what cats are inclined to do, and also taking lists of reported strays and animals that people had picked up and turned in, and then trying to match them up with people who had were calling in with, you know, I lost my dog in Woodland Hills, say, and then somebody says, well, I found a dog that matches that over in Sherman Oaks, or, you know, all these kind of things.
It's an incredible resource, really, at that level. Geez, if you can, you know.
Well, it was helpful. It was very helpful at the time, and mostly it was helpful just from the point of view of, you know, most people are not aware of the wider world of the humane community. If you look
mm-hmm.
in the phone book, back, especially back then, if you looked under animals, you either got the local shelter or the guy who's you called to get the raccoon out of your attic. You know, it wasn't really a well-known network of organizations. And so introducing people, helping people find their way around this and was really quite important at the time.
Sure.
Anyway, it's evolved since, and now the kind of things that we do, we have the Best Friends Catnippers Program, which is a free feral cat spay-neuter program in Los Angeles. We do super adoptions. We have a big super adoption coming up.
Yeah, I did want to find out, because there's one this Sunday, if I'm not mistaken.
Actually, it's a week, well, it's the 21st.
Yeah, so that's this Sunday, right? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, where is that, and how does it work, and give us the details.
That's going to be at Johnny Carson Park in Burbank, and Johnny Carson Park is, if you're going east on the 134, exit Bob Hope Drive, turn left, and it's right there.
Okay.
Just south of Alameda, next to the NBC studios. It's a beautiful place. And we did a really nice event there in 2002 with Animal Planet, and so we're revisiting it because it was such a nice community event.
Wow. And and how many people typically show up at these things? So I know the numbers in that way are pretty large, but more importantly, the numbers of animals that end up placed is just fantastic.
Well, it works very well. You know, we are not trying to sort of run the show. From that point of view, what we're doing is creating an opportunity for all the rescue organizations. So we invite up to about 60 organizations at a time, including the city shelters, to bring animals. We handle the publicity, the promotion, the organization of the event. And so there will be probably, you know, between 1,000, 1,200, 1,500 dogs, cats, rabbits, there's even parrots organization will be there.
Wow.
And the last event that we did found homes for about 350 animals. So that's very rewarding for
that's fantastic.
The
yeah.
afternoon's activity. Now, not everything, obviously, you know, the drill is that most organizations don't do same-day adoptions.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
These are, you know, approximations on feedback and all that sort of thing. But, you know, they're very effective, and it's also an opportunity to generate a profile for the cause, let people know what's going on, and for organizations to attract new members and new volunteers, because there will be about 7,500 people, 8,000 people that will come out for a day.
So it's really a great way to get all kinds of information and be introduced to organizations, as well as start the process to adopt an animal. Yeah, you're not going to be handed that animal that day, of course, but that sounds really fantastic, and those numbers, that's really impressive.
And, you know, our intention, obviously, is to make sure that the animals in the city shelters get first look and are given every opportunity to be to find homes. And city shelter animals can be adopted on the spot if they or have already been spayed or neutered.
Oh, great.
Yeah, and, you know, there are such beautiful critters that come out of these. The city shelter is just unbelievable. And, you know, another one of the things here is to dispel the myth that there's something wrong with shelter animals. I mean, they're just adorable. And as we know, most of the organizations that will be there are going to be showing animals that they themselves have pulled out of shelters here and there.
Of course. And, well, actually, maybe I want to get to Lint Roller in a second. But speaking of city shelters, any comments you might want to give us on Mr. Greenwalt deciding to announce his retirement and just some of the related issues on that?
Well, I mean, it's been a very contentious situation. You know,
yeah.
I don't know that the thing obviously has been unsatisfactory.
Sure.
I'm not going to sort of take swipes at people. You know,
okay.
Jerry's retiring.
Yep.
Hopefully things will move ahead in a positive direction. You know, we want to do things to help bring people into the shelters, find homes for more animals, improve the system, and, you know, bring more volunteers and all that sort of thing. And so it's an opportunity for, you know, a new start, and we all hope that it's going to be a good one.
Sure. And I'm sure you probably saw this at in our little news segment at the top of the show. I talked about the piece in the opinion section of the LA Times yesterday. That, I don't know if you saw that or heard about that, but it's a pretty interesting piece about that, and, you know, fanned out into other parts of the Hahn administration. But
right.
So, all right, and so yeah, let's also, before we're just about at the end of our time here, Francis, but let's hear a little bit about Lint Roller and anything else that you think we should know about before we have to move along here.
Well, the Lint Roller Party is our annual benefit, and the money from this event goes to support all of the Los Angeles programs that we undertake, the Super Adoptions, the Veterans Brigade, the Catnippers, you know, various day-to-day rescues and things like that. The Lint Roller Party is kind of our annual celebrity benefit. It's going to be on April 28th. And it's, you know, kind of over the top and a lot of fun. This one's going to be at Hollywood Athletic Club. So Wednesday evening from 7 to 11 p.m. And anybody who wants to find out more or purchase tickets, they can do that online at www.lintrollerparty.com.
Cool. And it looks like we might have a... I thought we might have a call for you there. But anyways, Francis, well, that sounds really cool. So it's interesting that it's a Wednesday night this year when I believe it was a weekend day.
Well, we had been, previous years we'd done them weekday evenings.
Okay.
Last year we did Sunday afternoon, and we kind of like to try and keep it mixed around.
I see.
Different things for
different people's schedules and stuff.
Different people's schedules and,
yeah,
you know, see what works and what's fun.
Cool. Actually, it looks like we might have a call. Let me just see if that's... Hi, you're on the air on Talking Animals with Francis Batista.
I have a question for your guest.
Okay, what's your name?
Liz.
Oh, hi, Liz. Welcome to Talking Animals. You're on with Francis Batista from Best Friends.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Hello, Francis.
Hi there.
I certainly commend you on what the work that you're doing. I wondered about young children. Do you have a chance to send out material to schools in the area, or do any of your programs do that? I'm such a strong believer in getting at the kids, you know, at an early age.
We have a humane education department. We do a lot of work with children at the sanctuary, really of all ages, particularly in the kind of adolescence, troubled youth, that sort of thing, children at risk. We have groups come here to spend time, work with the animals, and really get a different perspective and different take on life in general and on themselves and on the animals. We also do have materials, and a lot of it is, you know, not trying to reinvent the wheel. We do are members of the larger humane organizations that, you know, the Humane Educators Associations, and there's a lot of good information and material out there.
So
but you're absolutely right. I mean, getting it into schools and getting it as part of the curriculum is very important. Here in Utah, each year we have something called Utah's Week for the Animals, and we involve kids in art competitions, writing competitions, and we put curricula into schools for classes K through 12, all about the animals, and it's a kind of a a whole coordinated effort to elevate people's awareness and consciousness of things.
Well, that's a very encouraging thing to hear. So for any schools that want to get involved in it or to get interested to get to obtain information, what would be the first thing they should do, you would say?
Well, I would recommend them starting, you know, they can email humaneed, H-U-M-A-N-E-E-D, at bestfriends.org and get information about materials and programs that we have. But they will also, you know, if they don't have what people are looking for, they can also get directed to other sources of information.
Okay,
so email humaneed at bestfriends.org.
Yeah,
it's a good starting place.
Yeah, I've taken that down. Thank you very much.
Thanks
Thank
for
you.
Calling,
Bye-bye.
Liz. Thanks for the question. Well, that's that. Yeah, that's a very cool. Sorry. Okay, well, that's unfortunate. A little phone fiasco. We're not supposed to really talk about the circumstances here of the studio, but there was a little phone snag. Might have been my fault as well, but we're probably just running at the end of our time and probably too late to get Francis back on. But anyways, I want to thank Francis Batista for joining us today from Best Friends Animal Society. Again, find out more about the society, the sanctuary, upcoming events. It's bestfriends.org, www.bestfriends.org. And you can find out about, super adoption, lint roller, some of the educational things that our caller asked about. And again, we're sorry to have lost the call there at the very very end, but we do thank Francis for joining us. I'm Duncan Strauss, listening to Talking Animals on KUCI and Irvine, 88.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org. It's time to squeeze in our one of our last elements of the weekly show, Name That Animal Tune. It's remarkably like any other version of Name That Tune you'd care to mention, except that in this game, the tunes are always animal-related, usually just by virtue of one or more animals being part of the song title, but occasionally it's a bit more indirect than that. Either way, like most renditions of any kind of Name That Tune game, we can only provide a brief snippet of the tune in question for a number of reasons, not least that while, of course, the game hinges on a song being recognizable, we also don't want to stray too far for too long from the KUCI music policy. So with that preamble behind us, but also knowing there's always a prize, that's right, a prize, a very cool prize that we talked about earlier, for the first caller who correctly identifies the song artist. So as soon as you recognize this animal tune, please phone 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. All right, let's get started. It's Talking Animals, KUCI.
Five long years we have been together. Your love and understanding has brought us through stormy weather. I must admit, girl, I haven't always been good, but you stuck by me just like you said you would. Hey, I know that enough is enough, but you shouldn't be talking about giving up. Turning loose might be right, it seems. The wrong decision will spoil all our dreams. In the middle of a stream, giddy up, hi-yo, yeah. Giddy up, hi-yo, silver. I only did the things.
All right, well, you know, the title's in the thing, man. It's like the old Who's Buried in Grant's Tomb question. Anybody? Can anybody name that animal tune? All right. Well, you can always call in if you do. And, meanwhile, we've just about reached the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. I want to thank again our guest, Francis Batista. And you can visit the website at www.bestfriends.org, and that'll hook you into other specific info or links to other sites regarding the super adoption, lint roller, the humane education program, etc. I also want to thank you all for listening. Hope you'll join us next Monday on Talking Animals, when our tentatively scheduled guest will be singer-songwriter Nellie Mackay. The teenage sensation, whose debut album, Get Away From Me, has been out only a few weeks, but has already drawn a boatload of rave reviews and accolades. The album also includes some animal songs, and Nellie's a vocal and emphatic supporter of PETA. We'll talk music, animals, and activism, so please join us for that next Monday, March 22nd, on Talking Animals. By the way, other great public affairs shows on KUCI include just today alone, the Serena Sharp Show, which of course precedes Talking Animals. Then at 5 p.m. we offer Counterspin, followed at 5:30 by Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan. And that's just Monday. There's also great public affairs programming and talk shows like this virtually each weekday, 8 to 9 and 9 to 10 in the morning, then again from 5 to 6 in the afternoon. On the music side of the KUCI schedule, I also host a show called The Dead Air Zone, Thursdays from 4 to 5 p.m. So when you have a chance, please check that out. And again, I want to urge you to check out our website, talkinganimals.net. And when you get there, please sign up for our email list so we can alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. Also, I encourage you to email me with any comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, animal songs, animal comedy bits, news stories, anything else you'd like to pass along at talkinganimals@AOL.com. And really look forward to hearing from you. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease, his great, great blues show here on KUCI. And as always, we're going to close things out with an animal-related tune. This is Midnight Oil with Mosquito March. Again, I urge you to catch the Blues Disease, which will be infecting you momentarily. And this is 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And we'll catch you next week on Talking Animals. Take it away, Peter.
Future to the question.